A valuable and important presence in the area is the Omora Ethnobotanical Park near Port Williams. It consists of an old-growth forest which had been part of a sheep ranch in the 19th century. Both Ricardo Rossi and Francisca Massardo have been a motivational force behind the recent formation of the park. It's a site that attracts biologists, ornithologists, and other scientists from several countries. It was a pleasure to interact with scientists from Chile, Germany, the UK, and the US throughout our stay on the island. I'm sitting on a log on Navarino Island with Dr. Francisca Massardo, who has just been a wonderful guide for us here in our work on the island. And Pancha, I'm very impressed with the Omora Park that you and others have just started rather recently. Sounds like a fascinating project that you're working with.
This project is recent, because we started this at 2000, and our objective when we came, we didn't have really the idea to start the park because we didn't know where we were coming. But now we saw this spot because first it has a river who feeds Puerto Williams, the little town that is close, more or less 3 kilometers to the east. And also because when we came, we were impressed and how many different habitats we could find here. I mean, habitats that could be almost pristine as the forest that we are now, because this is an old-growth forest with lenga, and this is a very beautiful tree here, a deciduous tree. Also, we found habitats that are typical from disturbed zones for humans. For example, we know that this part of the island was a big hacienda, that means a kind of big farm.
The hacienda in the 19th century was a sheep ranch, which also introduced the cow and horse to the island. Then the Canadian beaver was introduced, and it has caused flooding and destruction in the forest. The park welcomes visitors with a modest display in the visitor center and guided walks through the forest with interpretive signs. The biodiversity of Omora Park reflects that of the entire Cape Horn region south of Tierra del Fuego.
In this part of the island that is more or less close to Puerto Williams, we started this forest, this park, because we thought that it could be a good idea to show different habitats for many people, for our visitors, so you could come here and more or less see what we have here in Cape Horn region. Also, we have 3 different objectives. First, of course, is scientific research. Most of us are ecologists or botanists or people from science, and we enjoy and we want and we think that scientific research is important. Also, because this is one of the 37 more pristine ecosystems in the world. Then our second objective is to do educational diffusion of our knowledge. We think that this is not time to be in the university. We need to open the university, we need to open science for most of the people so we could work together for our third objective, and this is conservation. We talk about biological and cultural conservation because biological conservation, I think everybody knows what we mean when we say biological conservation, but we are also interested in cultural conservation. We think that Jagan's view about nature are still alive and they are important, and we have an alternative of globalization that we are, I think, victims now. I also would like to say that we have here a wonderful spot of forest, but we have here few tree species, few bush species, but we have thousands of little species like bryophytes, I mean mosses and epaphytes, but also we have many thousands of lichens. So if that we call that the miniature forest. So maybe the biodiversity in big plants or visible plants, it's not very much. But we have here the 5% of the bryophytes in the world.
Christopher soon joined me in my forest recording studio. It's the end of another day at the Earthwatch project here in Navarino Island, waiting for the water to boil on the campsite next to the river. I'd like to ask Christopher about his work here. You've been about 3 years or so, haven't you?
Yeah, this is my fourth year, actually. Since 1999, I've been in Chile, and since 2000, we've been working with the Amora Project here on the island.
Tell us about that. That's really interesting, this Amora Project that you have a park here.
Yeah, Amora is a non-governmental organization that we started in 2000. It was the dream or idea of several individuals who just came together with an idea of having socially relevant science. So instead of the traditional model of a scientist coming to an unexplored area, taking his data, going back to Santiago or Washington, D.C., analyzing that data and publishing it in peer-reviewed journals, in contrast to that, we have stayed on the island for the last 5 years, worked in the local school, worked with local government, and while we do enter and leave, there's always something that stays. Some scientists may not live on the island, but they publish educational material through the NGO that does stay on the island and contributes to the local reality instead of something outside and external to the island.
I asked Chris if there is much that remains to be learned on the island.
Yeah, there are still things to discover. For example, this year we have a project called the Microbiodiversity of Cape Horn that's an environmental education project with the school children where we emphasize the small things on the island, such as insects, aquatic invertebrates, and non-vascular plants. And while the large flora and fauna on the island is rather poor, we only have 3 species of tree and 10 species of mammal, the very small things such as insects have hundreds of species, and the non-vascular flora has over 1,000 species, and we're still discovering new species. A couple new species of moss have been described for the area. There are undescribed insects that my project, for example, is finding. So there are definitely things yet to describe. And the ecological context of all this, all the biology that we do describe, is all new as well. Amora has 3 axes. One is education, one is research, and one is conservation. And each of those reciprocally reinforces the other. You can't have research. Research has no meaning if it doesn't feed back into something such as education or conservation. Education has no content without the primary research to provide the information. And conservation is vacuous without the other two to provide input as well. And so those are the 3 main branches of the NGO, the 3 main facets, if you will.
Our field assistance work as Earthwatch volunteers will soon come to an end. Our final chore is to prepare the park for an anniversary celebration with visiting dignitaries. We must still secure some of the interpretive signs along the trails and remove evidence of wandering cows. With shovel in hand, that's my job for the day. Then the visitors arrive, and the school children are poised to explain what they have learned this school year at the Amora Park. Chris and Maggie have worked closely with the schools in developing a way to study science and nature.
Yeah, so here we have a moss and a hepatic, or a liverwort, because this one's hairy, the leaves come out all around, and this one, the leaves are only on 2 sides. ¿Y este?
Ese es un líquen.
¿Y puedes explicarles lo que tiene un líquen adentro? ¿Simbiosis de qué?
Ah, es que es una simbiosis de hongos y plantas.
Y entre esas elegimos en dónde se encontraban más musgos, líquenes y hepáticas, si los árboles rectos o inclinados.
So for the science fair, they got to choose between a few different questions, and the question they chose was whether there are more mosses, lichens, and liverworts on straight trees or ones that are leaning.
In between demonstrations, I asked Steve about his pioneering study of birds on Navarino Island.
Well, we're standing near the entrance to the Park of Omora. This is where I've been doing most of my bird work over the last 3 years, because nothing has ever been done on any of the birds located on islands south of the Beagle Channel. I've been kind of concentrating on that. We know absolutely nothing about them, and most books say that once you go south of the Beagle Channel, all you have are a few islands with rocks, snow, wind, and almost nothing else that very few plants or animals could survive, especially because 10,000 years ago, it was all covered by glaciers. And the glaciers have receded for the most part, but it's very few plants and animals and birds and mammals supposedly have come back down here to colonize. And yet, we're standing here in a very lush forest, and we're finding rather quickly that there is many different species here. And I am looking at particularly the birds. I'm trying to see how are the birds doing down here. Once again, people think it's a very harsh environment. Very few species could survive. And yet I'm quickly finding that there are large numbers of individual birds of each species and that they are having no trouble reproducing. And in fact, some of the species that we're finding are laying two sets of eggs a year and raising young, which is remarkable anywhere, much less in an area that's supposed to have a very harsh climate. And we're finding that there seems to be plenty of food for them, although there's not a lot of different species of trees, plants that are producing many different fruits. There still is enough that these birds that have come down here are able to do quite fine on what's here, and there certainly is plenty of insects, as we're now learning, and plenty of mosses and lichens. And so there certainly is a variety of food for the birds that do make it down here. And we're finding that they seem to be reproducing as they would elsewhere in other parts of South America, and they're also living rather long periods of time because we are catching these birds in nets and banding them, and we can see year after year how many are surviving. And it turns out maybe not to be such a harsh climate after all, and that the species that are down here are doing quite fine.
Are all the bird species here migratory birds?
Only about half. Half the species stay here all year round, where it does snow in the winter, but it doesn't really get down to maybe below 20 degrees, and the snows will often melt after a week or two. But half the species do migrate. Some we know migrate up towards Santiago, because during the winter in the guards of Santiago, they see large numbers of some of our species here, but other species disappear entirely, and it's speculated they must go to the Amazon. So we are banding the birds here, and we're in contact with scientists in other countries, Bolivia, Paraguay, the Pantanal, the Amazon of Brazil, and we are hoping that as they miss net also, they will catch some of our birds with our individual numbers on it, and then they will contact us, and we'll begin to see the pattern of where exactly these birds do go for the winter, because although we can set aside this habitat here on the island and protect these birds, when they're not here, when they've migrated to somewhere else, if that habitat gets destroyed, they won't return. So we have to work not only here where they spend part of the year, but also their migratory route and where they spend their winter. So we're trying to find out where those are to work with the scientists in those countries to protect that area too. Rayaditos calling up in the treetops. They're a native species. They're here all year round. And they're cavity nesters. And what has probably happened is we've walked by as they were feeding their young. So that's their call they make whenever they're disturbed. And the idea is that whenever there's a predator near the nest, if they kind of go off to the distance and make a lot of noise, the predator will go over to where they're at to try to get them and forget where the nest is at. And then they'll calm down in a few minutes and silently go back to their nest, and their young has been protected.
Tachikachina, or thorn-tailed rayadito, is a bird that sings during the day in the mountains to warn that somebody is hiding. He tells the one who comes walking about the presence of others, also about any dog or cat, well, about any hidden thing. Their cries make you afraid when they sing together as they alert. Nothing good. Many thanks to the Omora Ethnobotanical Park and to the people of Kipa Akar for the recordings of Yagan stories. Thanks to Earthwatch Institute and the University of Magallanes in Punta Arenas. This program was recorded, written, and produced by Roger Emanuels at KUSP-FM in Santa Cruz, California.